At Perm Steel, so far there's, the motion has been seconded, nobody has objected, so if I open with a question, you want to tell your story again, that one could be surprised at the practice of Perm Steel's. Full disclosure, I've never been to a Perm Steel. Okay, that's not true. Full disclosure, I am a part of a yeshiva that does have an active Perm Steel every year, but I've never been. Okay, that's also not true. I have been actively involved in Perm Steels. This is Eschatai in the Mazkir Hayom. The question is it a chet? I guess that's the issue. Is there an Aveira that's associated with Perm Steels? So we have to first acknowledge that many great poskim were extremely opposed. And that's not so surprising. You can understand what the issues are. And that's why Vaji Yosef, for example, has a tshuva very much against it. And Rav Moshe Shternbuch in the Moedim Muzmanim has an essay very opposed. Rav Palm in the Atar Lamelech is quoted as being very opposed. Someone more recently told me that he learned in Torah Vadas, and he knows that Rav Palm on Purim only allowed jokes about him and not about anybody else. So it's not surprising, I think, to hear this, because we can guess what the issues are. The issues are clearly apparent. The concern, God forbid, of somebody being embarrassed, of bizayin talmidei chachamim, of bizayin haTorah. It's not hard to see that there are objectionable potential elements. And the objections were not only to Purim Shpils, but even things that may be less obviously problematic, a Purim Torah. Apparently there's a tradition of Purim Torah based on stories in Chumash, particularly Achiras Yosef, for whatever reason. And there are those who expressed opposition to that. Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky has a tshuva about that. So there is a lot of opposition to what we take for granted as a part of Purim, because despite this opposition, there were a number of Gedolim who apparently approved of it, because many yeshivos have this as a practice, and of course, first and foremost, our own beloved university, and others as well, for sure. Rav Schechter mentioned once in a lecture about Torah Mat, I think, that YU was founded by people who came over from Volozhin, so therefore we have all our practices from Volozhin. So we do everything exactly like Volozhin, with no difference. And if that's the case, so this could account for this as well, because in Volozhin they did have a Perm Steel. And this is recorded. Rav Nariya, for example, talks about in one of his svarim how in the days of the Netziv, the top student in Volozhin was a young man by the name of Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. And Rav Cook, or the pre-Rav Cook, did a spot-on imitation of the Netziv. It sounds very much like our contemporary Perm Steels. And he relates that several decades later, the top student in Merkez Harav was a great-grandson of the Netziv, and this great-grandson did a spot-on imitation of Rav Cook. Cook said, okay, I've been paid back. So it's well documented that in our ancestor Volozhin, there was a Perm Steel for sure. I say ancestor also, as Volozhin is known as the mother of yeshivas, so especially significant. And also in terms of Perm Torah, Rabbi Bleich likes telling a story, and I think I've seen this in some books as well, that I believe was also a Volozhin, that one of the Rosh Yeshiva got up on Purim and gave a shir, where he starts the regular way, he's saying, there's a Rambam here, there's a Rambam there, they contradict each other, and he spends an hour and a half, 2 hours, just to reconcile the Rambams. And there was nothing that was obviously funny about it, so the students were a little upset. And they came over to him afterwards and said, Rebbe, it's Purim. And the Rebbe responded, what do you mean? I made up both Rambams. The whole thing was a joke, and they didn't catch on. So, okay. There is a Masorah, at least within certain yeshivas, to have a Perm Steel. So, and we know that our Perm Steel is attended by almost all of the Rashi yeshiva who seem to be enjoying themselves. So, what is the hetek? What is the license for such activity? So, let's explore a couple of possibilities, and I think there's a different possibility to consider. Hi.
Can you explain what level of what's said over, or what level of roasting, or making fun of.
Oh, clearly that there's many details we have to figure out. You know that the devil literally is often in the details. You know that we still have to work around various major considerations. Plus, first, just the whole concept. You know that with all of its clear potential problems, what is the foundation which we start off with?
Unfortunately, I think it's become somewhat prevalent in some circles to do a similar thing for a chassan.
I've heard, and I think it is probably... I have never witnessed that. I don't know exactly how it happens. It is definitely a cause for concern. So I don't know how much it's defensible or not, because I don't know exactly what's happening. I would certainly be very worried about it. I've never seen this. I have heard this. I don't know when it takes place.
Maybe
to offer. Yeah, so I've been to in my life. I guess it must be more recent activity. So let's first look at this question and see if there's anything to draw upon. So the first to concern, maybe to start with, let's assume we're talking about the whole parsha of Lashon Hara. So the fact that it's a joke, does that help? So the short answer is no, because the Rambam and the Chofetz Chaim both write that Lashon Hara Daras Chok is a problem. Sounds like from the Chofetz Chaim like it's a full-blown Lashon Hara, and from the Rambam like it's Avak Lashon Hara. But one way or another, it seems to be included within Lashon Hara. Now we should mention that it's not a crazy Havamina, because sometimes you have people who are bullying other people, harassing other people, and they'll defend themselves by saying it's a joke. So in that context, you can't even understand where the defense begins from, because the victim's not laughing, the person who's being bullied is not laughing, so it's only the harasser who's laughing. So that doesn't make it better, that makes it sadistic. You know, the fact that he's laughing while he's hurting someone, it's not even conceivable where the defense is. Here, to say it's a joke, what you mean is, if I said something negative about somebody, I didn't mean it seriously, so it shouldn't be taken as disparaging because I didn't really mean it. It's only because it had a humorous quality to it. But nonetheless, that's probably what is defined as a Avak Lashon Hara in the Rambam's terminology, at least. And that's not going to be so helpful to us. That's not really going to be the root. A more likely candidate, and probably what people would guess if you asked them first, is the principle of mechila. That the assumption is that, look, the people are there, they're participating, they're probably mechil on whatever's happening. So,
and sometimes people ask ahead of time,
sometimes,
mechil?
Right.
Mechil what? Mechil what I'm going to say to you later.
Right.
I'm going to say to you later. I can't tell you.
So let's talk about that. So it's a little bit of, it's a lot bit of a shaky premise. It's not completely out of nowhere, but it's a shaky premise for a number of reasons. First of all, who knows if it's really true? Are we always careful to make sure that the people involved are mochel? Secondly, even if they do say they're mochel, so is it really genuine? This is a concern as well. Rav Avinah discusses this. He has a sefer on Lashon Hara where he discusses this particular point, that he's concerned that you don't know that the mechil is real, that people don't want to seem like they're a spoils for it. Everyone wants to seem like they're cool and they're willing to go along with it. So it's very possible you have people who are saying they're mochel, but they're not really mochel. And
imitation is Lashon Hara imitating someone?
No, not by definition. Well, I thought the question was going to be longer. Not the act of imitating somebody straight. The question is, what is the message you're conveying? If the message is you're trying to say that they're ridiculous or something, look how I can imitate them. So then the implication of disparagement is the problem. One can theoretically try to evoke somebody's presentation without necessarily conveying anything negative.
Is it the typical term for Shpil Yeshivas? Is it usually negative?
The question is, what's the message that's trying to be conveyed? Are you somehow making fun of them? So if that's the message, so then that should be problematic.
In other words, there can be issue of Lashon Hara without actually saying words that are Lashon Hara, but conveying a message that if you're conveying a message that the person is a cheap or sloppy or whatever, you know, negative connotation, you want to say he's foolish, he's stupid. You know, so whatever you're conveying, even though it didn't mean the same words, but...
Right, absolutely.
There's
I mean, again, it could be Avak Lashon Hara if it's more indirect, but it should certainly be somewhere within the spirit of Lashon Hara. So that being the case, let's move to this Mechila possibility. So we already have a number of issues. We don't know if the Mechila is there in the first place. We don't know if it's genuine, even if we have, on some level, checked. And it's also a question whether Mechila works for these kind of things. Now, certainly, after the fact, it can be mochel. If I hurt your feelings and I come to you tomorrow and I see you mochel, you can be mochel me afterwards. But this idea of mechila meirosh, does that really remove any isser beforehand? That's highly questionable. It works for monetary rights. So I can be mochel you that I'm not going to insist on any monetary kibedas. Now, this is something that we find Davki in the Purim discussion, which is a part of why this conversation goes where it does, because it's towards the end of Masechta Sukkah, around Daf Mem Vav, some of the Rishonim discussed this, that there were certain practices that were done in celebration of Yantif, in celebration of a wedding, in celebration of Purim, where the understanding is people are mochel each other. They involve minor acts of gezel, minor acts of hezek, and the assumption is that people are mochel each other because they want to have a good time, and they know that if I'm going to have a Purim party, and I'm going to sue you if you get a drop of wine on my carpet, so no one's going to come to the party. It's not going to be an environment anyone's going to enjoy. So we understand that we will have to be able to relax a little bit, so we have to be more tolerant with each other. And I saw an interesting board about that. Maybe we'll see if we have time at the end, maybe I'll mention it. I recently saw something. But there was apparently this practice that, okay, people are mochel, they understand each other. This is a little similar, but more understandable. There's a Gemara in Bava Kamma that says that if people are running around on Erev Shabbos and they're mazik each other, so they're potter because hezek b'rishus, because their pursuit of a mitzvah, and that's how they came to damage someone, so they are exempt. So it's a troubling concept, and as some of the Achronim explain, that what are you going to say? That really there's an exemption because you're involved in a mitzvah, so we should have to walk around the streets in body armor and helmets because who knows who's on the way to a bris or who's late for a shir. I mean, the streets are going to be the Wild West. How can we're going to assume that everybody can do whatever they want as long as they're on the way to a mitzvah? Very hard to believe. So they assume, and the Chavos Yoreh already wrote like this, that that's not really what it means. It means that the Gemara is talking about Erev Shabbos, when there's something going on that affects everybody. So you understand that on Erev Shabbos, people are running around. That it's different than a Tuesday morning. So you have to be more careful to protect yourself than you would under other circumstances. But it's not just the mitzvah itself that does it. It's the common understanding that this is what we're all dealing with. So we understand I have to be more careful with my stuff in this setting. So too, when we have a common event that we're all trying to celebrate together, and this is our mutual understanding, then perhaps there is a different standard. But that's in terms of monetary rights. It's not clear that if there is personal anguish, tzaira d'gufa, that is workable the same way. That for somebody to say that I'm mochel on my pain, it's not clear that that works. And if it does work, it could be revoked at any time. Because that's the Rishonim discuss in the first parak of Bava Basra by Hezek Re'iyah, this comes up. In the second parak of Bava Basra by Chardel, this comes up. That there are certain physical discomforts that a person can always assert their right to be makbid on. Because even if they were earlier in Mocho, but they could always say, I didn't know it was going to be this bad. I thought I could handle it, and I can't handle it. And therefore, you're not really covered with this kind of mechila, because even to whatever extent it exists, it's not going to really protect you, because if you go too far, and the victim can always justifiably say, yeah, it's not what I had in mind. I didn't know that that's what you were talking about. There's a... I should mention this. I mean, there's a... Right, we'll mention that later. Okay, whatever it is. It's not so clear that mechila is effective for this. Again, after the fact, you can get mechila, but the idea that it'll suspend any isser that's involved, it's a shaky premise. It helps. Certainly you don't want to do this without the assumption that people are okay with it, but it's not going to be enough. So what is the key? So I think the key is based on the following. There is a Gemara in Bava Basra now in the third parak, which made reference to the one and two. So in the third parak of Bava Basra, There is a Gemara, which appears also in Maseches Erchin, a familiar phrase, that states that Lashon Hara does not apply to something that is ape tlasa, that's something that is in front of throat. So the Rishonim have very different interpretations of what that means, because it's a vague statement. What does that mean? Something in front of three, there's no Lashon Hara. And the Chafetz Chaim writes in his Sefer that he thinks this heter v'apei tlasa should be very sparingly used, because, if at all, because it's so unclear what it means. The Rishonim have conflicting interpretations. And I don't think this is just the Chafetz Chaim as the author of the Mishnah Berurah saying, let's be choshesh to all the shittas. I think he's saying here that they all reflect certain realities of human nature. And since we don't really know what the Gemara is saying, because they all could be conceivably the pshat, so we have to worry that they all might be correct. So just to quickly go through the possibilities, the Rambam is the most intuitive and probably most well-known interpretation, that we're not talking about the speaker. The speaker is not any more justified because there's a larger crowd. And indeed, as you'd expect, the speaker is worse off if more people are listening. So what's this heter about? So he assumes it's a reference to the listener, that if you have heard Lashon Hara, and three or more people have also heard it, so therefore it's on its way to becoming world news, so then you're not prohibited from repeating it. That's the most common understanding of this idea. Now, it leaves open a lot of questions. People note that, what about the Midos prohibition of Lashon Hara? I mean, just because it's out there doesn't mean it's not nasty of you to be talking about it. Isn't this still a very bad character trait? And just because it's in the process of spreading, so you should be able to be the one to spread it further. It's like saying if somebody leaves their door unlocked, they're going to get robbed, so you can rob them. It doesn't seem to make sense. So some point out, just this little bit of a tangent, but it just to give some context to the story, that the Rambam seems to have two categories of Lashon Hara. If you read the way he writes it, the first he writes that Hamaganes Chavero, somebody who disparages his friend, that's a violation of Lashon Hara. And then he goes on to say, as if he's starting the whole conversation over again, says, what is Lashon Hara? Lashon Hara is somebody who says something that sounds like it's going to expose the person to some kind of risk of harm or fear of whatever it is. And then in that context he says, but if it's ape tlasa, if it's in front of three, it's mutter. So a number of Achronim understood that he's talking about two different things. First, he says, to be nasty, that's never mutter. But there's also a possibility that someone can have neutral intent, not to try to disparage anyone. But it's still Lashon Hara, because the effect is it's going to put somebody at risk. So to that second category, where there's no nastiness involved, so then he says, and then, if it happens to be ape tlasa, if it's already out there, so you're not doing anything to make it worse, so then, okay, there's no bad midah, there's no effect, so it should be okay. And he has a clause there, which is not in the Gemara, which is probably key here, where he says, "Bovad shlo yiskaven lahavir esakol yoser," that you have to not be trying to spread the rumor any further. So if you're not trying to disparage the person, you're just discussing it as it comes up, and you're not going to accelerate the pace of it spreading because you're not looking to get involved in disparaging this person. So that's where he says, okay, so then with all that, then it would be mutter. So that's the most common interpretation. There are three other interpretations, at least, though. The Rashbam understands that, again, it's about the listener, and the listener has the heter to talk about it, because since the speaker sees that there are more than three people there, he must be okay with it being spread. Now, who cares if he's okay? If he's doing something wrong, if he's saying Lashon Hara, so why should it matter that he's okay with it? So this clearly has... The speaker is okay with it being spread. Maybe the speaker is doing the wrong thing. So maybe the speaker wants to hurt the subject. So why is it okay? Just because he knows it's going to spread. So you have to assume we're talking about a very narrow category here. And maybe we're talking about Gilui Sod, about revealing, and all of these, the context, you learn the Gemara Bava Basra, you'll see the context is such that all these interpretations make sense. And it just fits with what's going on over there. even though they're very different from each other. So here, we'd have to be talking about a very narrow category, such as, let's say, revealing a secret. That the problem is, maybe what the speaker is saying is his own confidential issue, and maybe you should not repeat it out of respect to the speaker. But if the speaker says it in front of a large crowd, so apparently he doesn't think it's got to be kept confidential, and you're allowed to repeat it. Or maybe it's a certain kind of rechilus, that the speaker is talking about some other person. And we're talking here about telling that other person what's being said. And you might think that it's rechilus, that he's going to be shocked and it's going to get him all upset. He's going to be angry at the first guy. So apparently no, apparently this is not something contentious because the speaker knows that it's going to get to him and is not trying to hide it. And therefore you can assume it's not something with that kind of potential, perhaps. So those two interpretations see it as talking about listener, which is easier to understand, because why should the speaker be better off because he's speaking in front of a large crowd? However, the other two interpretations do assume that we're talking about the speaker. So what is going on here? How does the bigger size of the crowd make it better? So on the one hand, you have Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah understands that we're talking about something that is l'toales, is purposeful. So his point is that if you're saying something that is necessary to accomplish some goal, so then it's only mutter because you're going to accomplish the goal. But if you're just whispering in the corner to one person, so that's just gossip. That's not going to do anything. If you have something that needs to be fixed, so then you got to say it out loud so that people will hear it and do something about it, or that the person you're talking about should hear it and change his behavior. But to just whisper to one person here, one person there, that's not purposeful. If it's not purposeful, it's not mutter. It has to be something that's going to be effective, and that's why better it should be public than private. An interesting idea. But what we're really interested in, which this whole tangent was to serve the purpose of, is the view of Tosus. Tosus in Bava Basra and Tosus in Erechin have an interesting spin on this case. And they take it together with another surprising line. The Gemara in Erechin has another line very hard to understand. Because here we're seeing that saying something in front of one person is Lashon Hara, it would seem that a larger crowd would be worse, and yet we're trying to figure out this line. So what if the person you're speaking about is right there in front of you? So does that make it better or make it worse? Presumably it makes it worse, right? Not only are you speaking Lashon Hara to everyone else, but you're also embarrassing this guy who's sitting there. So I would think that's worse. And if you would think that, you'd be in good company, because the Chafetz Chaim writes that also. The Chafetz Chaim says, you speak Lashon Hara, the guy's not there. He's behind his back. So that's a violation of Arur Makarehu B'Sosu. But if the person is there, so it's not behind his back, but it's worse because you're embarrassing him. So how do we account for the fact that the Gemara has a statement in Maseches Erechin that komilsa this amris ape mara less behu mishum lashna bisha? Anything that is said in front of the subject is not lashon hara. So why should that be? So it's a tough sugya, and there are some who straight out just don't pass them like this. Assume that that's the dasyach in the Gemara that we don't follow. There are others who have other interpretations. The Sefer Yireyim assumes that it can be explained by a pasuk. I think in Yirmiyahu, Pasuk says, Holchei Rochel Nechoshes Barzel, that part of it, being a Rochel means that you are Nechoshes here and Barzel there, meaning that you're two-faced, that in front of the person you're nice, and when he's not there, so you're nasty. That's the whole nature of Achilles, according to the Yireyim. So if you're just as bad to him in front of him as you are when he's not there, so it's something else, but it's not Lashon Hara, according to him. It's clearly wrong, but it's not Lashon Hara. And the Maharal also has an interpretation which the Chafetz Chaim quotes and disagrees with. Maharal has a little bit of a hard to understand statement where he says that Lashon Hara is all about hurting people remotely. If you hurt people in front of them, it's a different this, or it's not Lashon Hara. And this is more to say about it. If you're just interested in that topic, the Chafetz Chaim objects, and he points out to a medrash, which is an interesting medrash because it totally changes your paradigm of how to read the story in Chumash. It says the main example of Lashon Hara in Chumash is Miriam talking about Moshe Rabbeinu to Aaron. And according to one opinion in the Medrash, get this, Moshe was there in the room at the time. So if morale is right, how do you explain this position that here this is clearly labeled as Lashon Hara, and yet Moshe was present? So this is an interesting discussion, which is a tangent, so I'll just bring it up. But the intellectual descendants of the Maharal, like Rav Huttner and Pachner Yitzchak and Moshe Shapiro and a few others, they all have a common Mahalach, which addresses this to defend the Maharal. And I think it's very interesting and something which has a big insight into what Lashon Hara is about, but that's all a tangent. So that's a different subject. I'll have to come back and talk about these things. But Tosfos addresses these two concepts together. Tosfos addresses Ape Tlasa in front of three and Ape Mara in front of the person. And they explain what they think it means. They say that why should it be okay to talk because you're in public or to talk because the person is there? We're referring here to a very specific type of Lashon Hara. It's not a normal disparaging speech. We're talking about somebody who's saying something which he means to be nice, actually. But it's a little ambiguous, and the listeners might interpret it negatively. So normally you would say that you shouldn't say such a thing. If there's a good chance that half your listeners are going to walk away with a negative opinion, so then maybe you shouldn't say it. So that's indeed the recommendation. You shouldn't say something that's going to have people walking away thinking it's negative. But, says Tosfos, if you're saying it in front of a lot of people, or you're saying it in front of the person you're talking about, then it's safe to assume that people will understand you mean it positively. Right? Let's say, for example, I take you aside in the corner, and I say, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on Yehoshaphat. So what does that mean? Well, it could mean he's reliable. Or it could mean you can always count on him to mess up. You can always count on him to do the wrong thing. So you won't know what I mean. That's a problem. But if I get up at the shul dinner, and there are hundreds of people there, and Yehoshaphat is there, and I say, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him. So then it's safe for me to assume that all my listeners will understand that I mean it positively, that if I'm saying it in such a context, I would only have a positive spin on it. Now again, parenthetically, as a tangent, I sometimes point to this Tosfos when considering the question of the impact of social media and the internet on the world of Lashon Hara. Because if you think about this assumption here, that here Tosfos is saying, you know, all of us say nasty things sometimes, but we won't say nasty things if we're in front of a large crowd or if the person we're talking about is listening. So nowadays, when we communicate, and it's not just Ape Tlasa, it's Ape 7 billion on the World Wide Web, is this assumption still true? I don't know, it's a little problematic. So that's one thing to...
You're saying it's not a kind of homer?
I think that we don't necessarily show ourselves to be so careful. I think that... I think we see people are very ready to say things that are horribly negative, despite the fact that there are millions of people reading and... including the person himself. So that's just a very big window into how our worlds have changed, how our level of discourse has changed. But in any event, this is the premise that Tosfos has. And I think we can glean the principle from here, that there are certain contexts that can be created where it gives meaning to whatever is being said and can change it from Lashon Hara to something else. Or can remove it from a concern of Lashon Hara, at least. And I think that's really what's operating here. That hopefully we're able to create an environment where it's clear that whatever is happening in the context of a Purim spiel is not meant to be negative and disparaging. It's meant to be a show of affection. It's meant to be something that people see as a show of love. And I hope that that's indeed the case. I know that I went into Chinuch hoping I would someday be in a Purim Spiel. Hasn't happened yet, but something one could appreciate. And hopefully that is indeed the atmosphere that we're cultivating, especially on Purim. Maybe there are other contexts which also have a similar kind of atmosphere. But especially on Purim, when that's the understanding that this is what we do. So the hope is that it creates that type of a context. So here, when we look at the fact that people are all around the room and they're laughing, so it's not necessarily that that's a sign of mechila that we mentioned before. Because like we said, that's a little shaky. Mechila is not necessarily enough. And who knows, maybe they're laughing because they feel they have to, but inside they're burning up. So we don't necessarily know that mechila is enough. But the fact that people are sitting around laughing, it's relevant maybe for this reason. Because we're doing this in such a context where the so-called targets are all here participating, because it's a show of love, it's a show of affection, it's not meant to be an attack. And hopefully that context has that effect and is able to actually convey that message. Now, with all that, so like we said, the details are certainly crucial. It's clearly possible that despite all that, somebody may make a big mistake and say something that is very hurtful and that is very painful. And that's why you still have to be exceedingly careful, and why these things really should be done under rabbinic supervision. And there needs to be a lot of wisdom and discretion that goes into how this is carried out. And in addition to the looming concerns that we mentioned at the beginning of Habanus Pnei Chaveira Barabim and Ostavarim, Bizayin Tamini Chachamim, which all remain very serious pitfalls, and therefore one really has to be very careful. There's another philosophical point, which maybe we'll mention in this context as well, that there is a statement Chazal have regarding Amalek, that Chazal attach Amalek to the concept of a letz, which we normally translate as a clown. And Leitzana says, joking around. And that doesn't seem to fit Amalek. I mean, if we were going to cast the Amalek movie and have somebody portray this archetypical Jewish enemy, a terrorist of Jewish history, I don't think a clown suit would be what comes up first. Whatever negative images people have about clowns, I think Amalek is a little bit beyond that. So the idea that Amalek should be referred to as a letz is interesting. So Rav Huttner discusses this in the first Maimer in Tachay Yitzchak on Purim, and explains that Leitzanus does not mean what we use it for today, joking around and acting like a clown. But it has a different usage in Scripture and in the Gemara. And there, a letz is a cynic, somebody who believes that nothing is important. And a cynic, the Bali Musar writes, all the Musar in the world is not going to get through to somebody who has just a little bit of cynicism, because it just takes away the significance of everything. So, to that extent, it says that's why the Gemara says, "Kol tzanusa asur chutzmul tzanusa davodas kochavim," that all cynicism is prohibited unless it's directed at avodah zarah, because it's a very negative midah. And it's only in the case of avodah zarah that it makes sense, because the ultimate misuse of respect is avodah zarah, because the ultimate respect is worship. The ultimate misuse is avodah zarah. So somebody who is conveying importance in such a damaging way, in an idolatrous way, so to that, cynicism is an appropriate remedy. But for everything else, to scoff, to be cynical, is a highly damaging character trait. So as we approach Purim, and we look to hone our midas humor, our Jewish sense of humor, it's a very important cautionary nekuda that one should not descend into cynicism. And therefore the Purim spiel should be uplifting, should be affectionate, should be something that people come with a positive, warm sense towards each other. But anything that engenders cynicism on top of everything else is, to a certain degree, as harsh as it sounds, the midah of Amalek, the midah that we are coming to uproot on Purim time. So this is another component of what we have to bring to the experience, that we want to avoid all of these obvious transgressions, but avoid as well this attribute of Amalek. And we could say, al piderach hadrush, that the fact that the Shabbos Parsha Zachar is always placed before Purim is a little bit of a warning before we head towards Purim, that okay, we'll do what we do. Purim is traditionally a day of joking around for a number of reasons, but the cynicism of Amalek is not where we're going to go, is not something that is good for us. So I think maybe with all this together, this helps create a little bit of a framework, first, of why there is an acceptance of Perm Spiels in our circles, and within that, what has to be some of the cautionary points. And just about this thing, the details, just while we're talking Lashon Hara, mention one other point. You know, very often people ask questions in Lashon Hara, and I tell them that I think the klal is we should worry less about the big questions and more about the small questions. What do I mean? And people ask questions like, our newspapers mutter, our book reviews mutter, things like that, or online comments mutter. And I think it's a mistake to see them only as klalim, because there could be justifications for all of these things. There could be important needs for newspapers, important needs for book reviews, and for online comments of merchandise and things like that. All of these could certainly serve a purpose within a halachic framework and might be very important within a halachic framework. But the question is, how do you do them? Do you make sure to go about these things in a way that is fair, that is reasonable, that is proportionate, that is with a sensitivity to all of the concerns of Lashon Hara? Or do you assume, okay, well, since there's some need for newspapers, so therefore I can basically just stop thinking about it, which I think is often the way the conversation goes, that people see it as all or nothing. And you know, you do find the impact of that. So I think when it comes to a lot of these questions, you have to less focus on the big questions, is this okay or not, but more think about how we do them, because that's where all the difference can lie. And it's not a question of our newspapers mutter or our book reviews mutter, it's a question of how do you manage your newspaper, how do you write your book review. That is really a much more relevant question than these big yes or no questions. And that's also certainly the case with Perm Spiel. So the question is there a heter, a purpose in Perm Spiel? So that's what we try to address a little bit. But then that certainly does not save us from the next question of how do you do it and what care do you bring to the experience? Because nothing that we've said till now is going to save us if we abdicate the responsibility of being careful and sensitive and respectful as we engage in this endeavor. So I think that's a little bit of a context, and just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we mentioned that there is a question, how can we allow Perm Spiels? Great poskim did oppose it, Bavaji Yosei from Rosh Hashanah, Rav Pam, many others wrote very strongly against it. But there's a tradition in our yeshiva going back to Volozhin that seems to be accepted. So how could that be? So we discussed a couple possibilities. We said saying it's just a joke does not help so much, because Lashon Hara Derech Chof is prohibited as Lashon Hara Mamish according to Chavetz Chaim, Zavak Lashon Hara according to the Rambam. So then we moved on to Mechila. We said Mechila does have some relevance here, and it's better to make sure we have Mechila than not. But it's not going to take us all the way, because first of all, we're not always careful to make sure it's there. Second of all, even if we've checked, it may not be genuine. And third of all, we're not sure if Mechila works by personal anguish beforehand. And even if it does work, it could be revoked at any time. So it's certainly not going to be a all accounts coverage. So then we talked about the idea of Ape Tzlasa, the question of what does it mean when the Gemara says that Lashon Hara doesn't apply in a public setting. And we saw four different opinions how to understand that. The Rambam, that it refers to the speak to the listener who can assume it's already public knowledge, you can speak about it. The Rashbam, who says it also applies to the listener, but the issue is confidentiality or something like that. So the fact that the speaker is speaking in this context shows that he's okay with it being dispersed, and that makes it okay for you. But the other two opinions assume it's talking about the speaker. The speaker is better off, the Rabbi Yona, because it's the toelis, and if it's going to be the toelis, it has to be in a way that actually gets out there. And what we were interested in is Tosfos. Tosfos combines this with the other statement, Kamilsa Desamras Apre Mara, and anything that's said in front of the person is not considered to be Lashon Hara, also a surprising statement. And Tosfos says about both statements that we're talking about not outright Lashon Hara, but rather something which is a little bit ambiguous and could leave people with a negative impression. And therefore, the crowd, or the fact the person is there, helps guarantee that it will be perceived as positive rather than any other way. And we understood that to be a statement that sometimes you have potentially problematic speech, But the context, the environment, can frame it in such a way that it should be okay, and that maybe that's also what we go for with the Purim Shpils, that we hope that the environment is such that it's understood as affectionate rather than disparaging or hurtful, and therefore the fact that people are sitting around laughing is significant, not just because it means they're mochel, because like we said, they're shaky, but it means that this is the environment that we have hopefully created and sustained, and that should make everything at least begin the conversation, even if the details are crucial. Then we talked about how we do have to be careful about the details, and that involves all of the issues that we've mentioned, but also the issue of cynicism, to make sure that that does not enter into our presentation, especially because cynicism is associated with a malik deleits onus, and Purim, we're trying to move the opposite direction of a malik, so to allow any cynicism to enter into our mindset is something that we have to also be very careful about. Tremendous thank you to David Feinberg for putting this together and to Scott for hosting this beautiful set.